When most Canadian investors think about diversification, it's usually that classic mix, right? Canadian stocks, maybe some government
It's
bond.
pretty standard stuff, yeah.
But the whole investment world, it keeps moving. And some recent changes have opened up some really interesting new ways we might build a genuinely diverse portfolio.
That's true.
So if you're trying to get a handle on these new options, quickly, thoroughly, without getting bogged down in jargon, well, you're in the right place.
Absolutely. Today we're really digging into this paper from the Canadian Association of Alternative Strategies and Assets, CASA. It's all about Canada's new liquid
Like
alternatives.
what alternatives?
Yeah. And our mission today is basically to unpack what they are, how they're different from, the investments you might already hold, and why they could actually be pretty significant for individual investors like you.
Okay, sounds good. And the CASA paper, it gives a great overview,
Well,
right? And it even digs into specifics.
it does. We'll touch on private lending later as one example of a strategy that's, well, more accessible now through these liquid alts. The paper also covers the rule changes that made it possible, and you get perspectives from asset managers too.
All right, let's dive in then. What are these things? Liquid alternatives.
Okay, so liquid alternatives, they're essentially a new type of investment fund structure here in Canada. The rules for them were finalized back in January 2019. We saw a few pop up that year too.
2019. Okay, relatively new then.
Yeah. And what's really key here is that these rules, they open the door to strategies that, well, previously were pretty much only available to accredited investors.
Accredited investors, so wealthier individuals, right? People meeting certain income or asset thresholds.
Exactly. High net worth individuals, institutions. But now the paper points out everyday investors, true retail, mom and pop investors, they can get access too.
Okay. So it's like democratizing access to these more complex or maybe different kinds of strategies.
That's a good way to put it. Yeah.
And the paper mentions they're sold through IROC channels.
Yeah.
That's broker-dealers, investment advisors. Not the typical MFDA mutual fund reps you might find at a bank branch.
That's generally right. And that difference in sort of where you buy them hints at some pretty fundamental differences in how they operate compared to, say, a regular mutual fund.
Okay. Like what kind of differences?
Well, for starters, the investment rules are just more flexible. They let managers use alternative strategies that you wouldn't typically find or aren't even allowed in conventional funds.
More flexibility.
Okay.
What does that mean in practice? The paper talks about leverage, for instance.
Yes, leverage is a big one, a really big difference. Liquid alts, they can use borrowing leverage up to 300% of their net asset value, their NAV.
300%. That sounds like a lot.
It can be significant, yeah. Conventional mutual funds, they can't use leverage like that at all. And this ability to, amplify exposure can potentially boost returns for you.
But there's always a but, right?
Always. It also amplifies potential losses. So, more potential upside, but also more potential downside risk. That's absolutely crucial for you to understand.
Right, okay. A tool that definitely cuts both ways. What else? The paper mentioned short selling, betting against a stock.
Yeah, another area with more freedom. With liquid alts, there's no specific cap on short selling as long as it fits within that overall 300% leverage limit we talked
Oh,
about.
yeah.
Traditional mutual funds, though, they're usually capped at shorting maybe 20% of their NAV. And there's also a difference in what's called short cover.
Short cover, what's that?
It's basically ensuring the fund has the means, usually cash, set aside to buy back the shares they borrowed if the price goes up instead of down. Conventional funds need to hold about 50% cash cover for their shorts.
Right.
Liquid alts, they don't have that same specific cash reserve requirement for short cover. It gives the manager more flexibility, maybe more capital efficiency, but again, slightly changes the risk dynamics for you.
I see. So definitely more tools in the manager's toolbox. What about concentration, holding a lot of one particular thing?
Another difference. Liquid alts can invest up to 20% of their NAV in a single company's securities. For traditional funds, that limit is usually 10%.
Okay, so potentially less diversified within the fund itself in some cases.
Potentially, yes. Or you could say able to take higher conviction positions. They also have a limit on illiquid assets, things harder to sell, quickly capped at 20% of NAV. Though the paper does note most Canadian hedge strategies tend to be pretty liquid anyway.
And fees. How do the managers get paid? That's always important for investors.
Right. And again, more flexibility here. Liquid alt managers can charge the standard management fee, but they can also charge performance fees.
Performance fees, meaning they get a cut if they do well.
Exactly. Often these come with what's called a hurdle rate. So the manager might only earn that performance fee if they beat a certain benchmark, like the TSX index return, or maybe just generate a positive return.
Hmm. That could align their interests with the investor, couldn't it? If they only get the bonus for actually delivering strong results for you.
That's the idea, yes. It incentivizes performance above a certain threshold.
The paper also just touches on some recent exemptions. Something about even more leverage for commodity pools.
Yeah, there are some specific cases, like for funds using futures contracts and commodity pools, where they might get exemptive relief to go beyond that 300% leverage. It shows the space is still, you know, evolving.
And maybe different redemption frequencies, too, not just daily.
That's right. Some funds might offer, say, monthly liquidity, maybe with a 20-day notice period or perhaps weekly. It depends on the underlying strategy and how liquid it is.
Okay, so a lot of structural differences. But why? Why did regulators decide to create this whole new category? What was the gap they were trying to fill?
Well, if you look at the Kazatsa paper's foreword, it really comes back to the environment we've been in since, well, the global financial crisis.
Low interest rates, mostly.
Exactly. Persistently low interest rates and also tight credit spreads, meaning not much extra yield for taking on extra credit risk. So investors, understandably, have been searching high and low for better potential returns, for higher yields.
Okay.
And regulators saw this. They wanted to make, you know, potentially valuable and stable investment products more widely available to all Canadians, especially given how markets have become much more correlated and sometimes volatile.
So trying to give average investors like you access to some of the diversification or return-enhancing tools that maybe pension funds or wealthier investors were already using.
That seems to be a big part of the motivation, yes.
Okay. Now, the paper talks about the plumbing, the operational side of things. Mm-hmm. Custodians, prime brokers. How does that work differently for liquid alts?
Right, the plumbing. It's definitely a shift. See, traditional hedge funds rely heavily on prime brokers for things like borrowing securities, for shorting, facilitating leverage, helping value complex positions.
Mm.
Now you have more traditional asset managers coming into the liquid alts space. They might not have those existing deep prime brokerage relationships. And custodians, who usually just safeguard assets for mutual funds, they're also having to adapt to this kind of hybrid model. It blends bits of the mutual fund world with bits of the hedge fund world.
So the back office stuff gets more complicated.
It can, yeah. Mm. Especially if you're dealing with shorting, leverage, maybe more complex derivatives.
And the paper mentions sub-advisory relationships as a way around that, maybe.
Exactly. That's a common route. A traditional manager might launch a liquid alt fund, but then hire a specialized alternative manager, a sub-advisor, who already has all the infrastructure and expertise for the specific strategy, like managing shorts or leverage.
Ah, okay. So they can sort of rent the expertise in the complex plumbing.
Pretty much. It lets them offer these strategies to you without having to build out a whole new operational setup themselves.
That makes sense. And you mentioned performance fees earlier. The paper notes calculating those, especially with hurdle rates, adds complexity too.
It certainly does. Getting the net asset value calculation precise, accruing for potential performance fees correctly, especially when they depend on hitting a benchmark, it requires robust systems.
Right. Which leads to another point in the paper, the need for advisor education.
Absolutely critical. Ron Landry from CIBC Mellon makes that point in the paper. Advisors really need to understand not just the structure, but the specific strategy inside each liquid alt fund to advise their clients, like you, properly. It's not a one-size-fits-all situation.
Okay, so we've got the structure, the plumbing. How should investors actually think about these in their portfolio? Are they like a totally separate asset class?
That's a great question. And the folks from Connor, Clark, and Lunn in the paper have a useful way to frame it. They argue liquid alts aren't necessarily a new asset class per se.
Okay.
Instead, think of them as tools or structures that can enhance your existing portfolio. They make this distinction between diversifiers and substitutes.
Diversifiers and substitutes. Explain that a bit.
Sure. A diversifier would be a strategy that brings a genuinely different risk and return pattern to your overall portfolio, something maybe uncorrelated to your stocks and bonds. A substitute, on the other hand, might aim to replace a part of your traditional allocation, say your bonds, but potentially offer better returns or lower risk within that asset class sleeve.
Hmm. Okay. So like a market neutral fund might be a diversifier, while maybe a leveraged short-term bond fund could be seen as a substitute for traditional bonds aiming for higher yield.
That's the kind of thinking, exactly. And given where we might be heading, you know, maybe slower economic growth, bond yield's still pretty low, having these extra tools could be really valuable for you. They give managers more ways to potentially navigate tricky markets.
Now, one thing the paper really stresses is avoiding a common misconception.
Yeah.
What's the big mistake people make when thinking about liquid alts?
Yeah, Tim Elliott from Connor Clark and Lund flags this. The biggest myth is thinking all liquid alts are the same, that they all follow one type of strategy. It's crucial, absolutely crucial to remember. Liquid alternative describes the structure, the container. It doesn't tell you much about the actual investment strategy inside that container.
Right. It's like calling everything with four wheels a car. A pickup truck and a sports car are very different beasts.
Exactly. Perfect analogy. So you, as the investor or working with your advisor, you have to look under the hood. Evaluate each strategy individually.
What's its goal? How does it try to achieve it? Does it fit your needs and your overall portfolio?
Precisely. And the paper also kind of sets the stage by suggesting, look, maybe future returns from just plain old traditional stocks and bonds, long-only portfolios, might be lower than in the past.
Right.
So liquid alts could potentially be a way for you to maintain your return objectives, perhaps without just piling on more and more equity risk.
Okay, that leads nicely into some specific examples. The paper spends a fair bit of time on fixed income strategies within liquid alts. Why is the focus there?
Well, it ties back to those challenges in the traditional bond market we mentioned earlier. The section from Lawrence Park Asset Management really highlights this. Bond yields are low. If you want more income the traditional way, you often have to buy lower quality bonds, taking more credit risk, or longer maturity bonds, taking more interest rate risk.
Which maybe isn't ideal for everyone.
Exactly. So investors are looking for alternatives.
And the paper suggests liquid alts offer some new plays in fixed income, especially using that leverage we talked about, but on like high quality short-term debt.
Yes, that's a key strategy discussed. Using leverage, remember, up to 300% NAV is possible, but applying it to high-quality investment-grade bonds that mature relatively soon.
Okay, so why that specific combo?
Well, the idea is you potentially boost the yield using leverage, but you're not dramatically increasing default risk because you're sticking to high-quality issuers. And by keeping the maturity short, you're less sensitive to potential interest rate hikes.
Ah, I see. Less rate risk, less credit risk, but leverage juices the potential return.
That's the aim. And Lawrence Park makes the interesting point that this specific niche, high-quality, short-dated corporate credit has often been a bit overlooked or underutilized in traditional bond funds.
Interesting. And short-term bonds, they mature faster, so they throw off cash more quickly too, right?
Sure.
Which could be good in volatile times.
Exactly. More flexibility. As bonds mature, the manager gets cash back sooner, which can then be reinvested maybe at more attractive yields if rates have moved or spreads have widened.
Okay. The paper then talks about some more active trading strategies within fixed income liquid alts. Relative value trading. What's that?
Right. Relative value trading in bonds, it's about finding small pricing differences between very similar bonds, often from the same company.
Okay.
Like maybe a company has two different bonds at standing and the manager thinks one is slightly too cheap, undervalued compared to the other, which they think is slightly too expensive, overvalued, even though the underlying credit risk is almost identical.
So what do they do?
They'd buy the cheap one and simultaneously sell short the expensive one. The goal is to profit simply from that price gap closing, regardless of whether the company's bonds overall go up or down.
Hmm. So it's not a bet on the company itself, but on the relationship between its bonds.
Precisely. And because of that, the returns from this kind of strategy can be pretty uncorrelated to the broader market movements. It also reduces your specific risk exposure to that single company failing because you're both long and short its debt.
And the liquid alt structure, with its ability to short sell easily, is kind of ideal for that.
Extremely well suited, yes.
Okay. What was the other one? New issue trading.
Yeah, new issue trading. This involves participating when companies issue new bonds, especially if they seem attractively priced, maybe, to ensure the deal gets done.
Getting in on the ground floor, sort of?
Kind of. Or it might involve trading in the secondary market shortly after issuance, maybe taking advantage of price moves caused by, say, big index funds having to buy, or perhaps initial selling pressure from investors who got an allocation but didn't really want it.
So trying to capture small profits from those initial market dynamics.
That's often the goal, yes. Buy at a good price, maybe sell for a quick gain, or hold it if it improves the portfolio's overall yield and risk profile.
And leverage helps here too, right?
Yeah.
Lets them jump on these opportunities without selling something else.
Correct. More flexibility again. The paper kind of sums up this section by saying, these fixed income liquid alt strategies give investors and advisors new ways to actively try and profit from market inefficiencies, which is something a simple buy and hold bond fund can't really do.
Got it. The paper also very briefly mentions factoring, just as another example. What is that, quickly?
Yeah, just a quick mention. Factoring is basically when a business sells its accounts receivable, the money its customers owe it to a third party, the factor, at a discount.
Why would they do that?
To get cash immediately instead of waiting for customers to pay. It's a short-term financing tool for businesses needing liquidity. So a fund might buy these receivables.
Okay, so buying invoices at a discount for cash flow. Interesting. It really shows the sheer variety of strategies that can live inside this liquid alts wrapper.
It really does. And yeah. That's probably the main thing for you, the listener, to take away. Liquid alternatives are a genuinely significant shift in Canadian investing. They're opening up access for you to a much wider range of strategies, things that were mostly off limits before.
Right. Potential for better diversification, maybe new ways to generate returns or manage risk.
Exactly. And giving asset managers new tools, which can be really important in the, you know, complex and interconnected markets we seem to be facing now.
So definitely something to think about. As you look at your own portfolio, it seems worth considering how these newly available strategies might fit in. Maybe asking your advisor, you know, could these actually help you reach your long-term goals in this kind of evolving investment landscape? Definitely some food for thought there.